some of the best partnerships you can have that I've ever had are with my closest friends, family members. But it's setting very clear expectations, what everybody's bringing to the table, and making sure that the partnership is, you know, everybody's getting what they want out of it. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday and my co-host, Mr. Jake.
Yes, sir. What's yes, up, sir. Buddy? Man, good feeling good. Happy to be here. Great day to be alive.
Great day to be alive.
Energy's up. Energy's up. Yes, sir.
All right.
I'm so excited
raising the energy bar today.
I'm so excited. This is going to be a great episode for you listeners. Such good topics today, man.
All right. What do we got? What's on the agenda? You're kind of amped up today,
so I got to bring the energy
to see what we have on the agenda.
All right, so here we go. This is the title: Should you go into business with friends or family? This is the premise right here. People are going home for the holidays, right?
Yep.
And man, they're going to go home and they're going to see their family and their friends, and it's going to be great. And then someone's probably going to ask you, "How's that Airbnb thing you were talking about? You were going to do maybe last year? I haven't seen you in a year. How's that been going?" And then you're going to tell them, we joined Vodacy and now we're in the top 10% or we're in the top 1%. We did great with our taxes. We're making this money. And those people are going to go, maybe we should do that. Maybe, hey, man, can you kind of teach me? Can we kind of do this thing too? And then now you have to have the question of, do I want to go into this with my family and friends? So we're going to talk about the percentage of what you should do. Should you go 50-50? What does that even look like? How much capital are you putting in? How much are they putting in? What do the taxes look like? What is that going to be? Who's going to design it? Who's going to market it? I mean, is this more of a handshake deal or is this something you need to have in writing? And if worse comes to worse, God forbid it goes negative, how do you get out of the situation? So we're going to break it all down of whether or not you should go into business with friends or family and what that looks like. All right. So I think the nice starting point with this is, you know, a lot of people, they're high income earners, the ones that are listening to this. We talked about that last week. You know, these are achievers right now, right? So maybe they don't like to talk about the flashy things. Maybe they don't want to talk about how much money they're making, right? But I mean, they also know they're investing in this because 401k is dead. We've seen numerous articles on that. I'm telling you the facts here. So is this something that they should even bring up, or should they wait on someone else to bring up?
You wait.
Right? You wait. Okay.
I wait. You know, I think naturally people who are close to you know what you're like. They're paying attention to what's going on. If things are good, you know, they're curious. Mm-hmm. They want to know how it's going. You know, if you mentioned that you have most of us are, you know, we're not shy. We don't not bring up the fact that we have short-term rentals or vacation homes to our friends and family. Right. But you know, you don't necessarily need to be bragging about their performance, but they're naturally, people are going to ask, and it's okay to tell them the truth, right? Mm-hmm. If you're doing well, great. If you're not, tell them as well.
Right.
But most likely, you know, that if you're doing well, people want to know about it. Mm-hmm. And they naturally are going to say, hey, maybe can you tell me a little bit more about it? Maybe we can, and you're alluding to some people are going to want a partner, you know, and maybe that's a good idea. Maybe it's not a good idea, right? Mm-hmm. People always, you know, there's things that, in a partnership, everybody's got to bring something to the table, and you have to decide, is somebody just trying to ride your coattails because now you're doing good and now they want to be a part of it? Do you really need a partner? Sometimes partners are great to scale things, but other times people are just saying, hey, listen, maybe you can teach me how to do it. Maybe show me what you're doing. Show me what's working so I don't have to make, you know, I can double down on your successes and things you've already learned. Maybe I can avoid some of the mistakes that I don't need to make. And ultimately, that's perfectly fine too. There's a lot of our friends and family. It's how I started Vodacy, frankly. Right. I was just investing in short-term rentals. I had enough people asking me, how are you doing this? Right. What are you doing? Tell me what's working. Tell me what's not working. Mm. And so, you know, I think naturally conversations lead to that. You have to decide if you want to bring on partners. You know, I think partnerships can be really great, and friends and family partnerships, the biggest drawback with them is that we assume that because we're friends and family, that we don't need to have everything in writing and that we don't need to be very strict on who's doing what and what responsibilities, what everybody's bringing to the partnership.
Right.
And we get very lax on that. Mm-hmm. Right. And so some of the biggest mistakes that I see with partnerships are between friends and family. And it's because of the lack of clarity, the lack of expectations. Mm-hmm. And we just assume that everybody's on the same page because we're such good friends and we're family and we know each other. Right. And that's not the case when it comes to investments. Many times. And so, but some of the best partnerships you can have that I've ever had are with my closest friends, family members. Mm. And, but it's setting very clear expectations, what everybody's bringing to the table, and making sure that the partnership is, you know, everybody's getting what they want out of it. Everybody's bringing what they were expected to bring, whether it's money, whether it's expertise, whether it's, you know, whether it's operational, who's going to be doing what. When you set those expectations on the front end, it can lead to a really good partnership, and it has to be in writing, right? Put everything down in writing. Assume that you're not best friends. Assume that you're not close family members. And the better the contract, the better the partnership is. And the more detailed the contract, the more detailed the expectations, the better that the partnership's going to be, because there's, you're not leaving anything up to interpretation.
Right.
And the biggest mistakes that friends and family make is we leave too much to interpretation because we assume we're always going to be on the same page.
Right.
And we're not. And that's when you hear of partnerships going bad. And it's when you hear of relationships going bad. And I promise you, there is no real estate deal that is worth ruining a relationship over. And unfortunately it happens on a regular basis and it's just not worth it. And it's not, you know, so being very clear on the front end is what makes a really good partnership.
Crucial. Right? It's crucial. Okay. So is this like a legal document you're going to get a lawyer to draw up, or is this something that you can make a Google Doc and you can kind of go through the things yourself and then just have them sign it? Or should you?
Yeah, you're going to have a contract. You have a lawyer side, I think it's a good idea to have really, you know, detailed LLCs, operational, you know, you have operating agreements in your LLC that really details out the responsibility and the expectations of everybody.
Right.
And then when it's put together like that, even though it seems unnecessary, so many of us feel like it's unnecessary to do that with our friends and family. Even asking the question, you're like, well, do we need to get a lawyer involved? And yeah, you really should, because the clearer the expectations are set on the front end, the more detailed, the more cut and dry they are, the better the partnership is for everybody. And everybody just follows based on what is written out in the operating agreement. So, you know, maybe you get a lawyer involved. I mean, there's a tool that called ChatGPT now that does pretty helpful, but yeah, everybody needs to sign it. And be on the same page and be able to really, really identify and set those expectations. Wow. That's really what it comes down to, is really clearly defining what everybody's bringing, what everybody is getting, you know, who's going to be involved in what. And it doesn't always mean it's a 50-50 split. It doesn't, you know, it could be, you know, there could be some value in the money put in. There could be some value in the management that's put in. And so, but make sure that everybody is agreement on what the value is to all of those different things, right? I might not bring all the money to the table, and I'm bringing the expertise, and I'm valuing that expertise as very significant because, you know, I feel like, hey, I know how to operate in this game. You don't. And even though you have the money involved, I'm going to make sure that money grows and is protected and is put in the best, you know, we're going to operate this at a high capacity so that, you know, it's a very responsible placement for that money, for example. And I might put a huge value on that and you might not. And if we don't talk about it and we're, and then all of a sudden we get down the road, you know, a little ways and you're like, well, Sean, listen, I put all the money up. So, you know, I've got more, you know, and everything's going great. And I'm saying, well, Jake, it's going great because I'm the one operating it because I know how to do this. And we all of a sudden start to become at odds a little bit. And because we didn't value each other's inputs as much as maybe we should have
at the beginning.
And if we would have known that at the beginning, maybe we didn't go into, maybe if you would have told me, hey, listen, I'm putting all the money up. I'm the key player here. And the knowledge and expertise you have, I'm not putting a lot of value on that. If I would have known that in the very beginning, maybe I wouldn't have done the deal.
Right.
And vice versa. Right. Wow. And so, it's understanding everything in the beginning, because I think that when we don't have the conversations and we don't want to, you know, set clear expectations, or we, and everybody's on a little bit different page, we assume when we're best friends and we assume when we're family members that we're always on the same page. That's not the case.
Wow. I really was not expecting you to say that. I really thought you were going to say this is more like a handshake thing. You just kind of talk about it. So I'm really happy I asked that question. Okay. That's really good to know. And it seems like it would really save you in the long run. Like, it may seem super uncomfortable to like get a lawyer involved and draw up the contract, but think about how much like more awkward and uncomfortable it would be if like down the road, you, like you said, they're like, I don't value your knowledge anymore. And you're, now you're like already in this thing.
Right.
That seems really interesting. Okay. Now, let's kind of talk about another portion of this, of the knowledge aspect. When someone, if somebody goes like, I want to do that, maybe it's your best friend, or even let's go your best friend or your brother or sister that I really want to do that too. They want to partner with you. would it be wise for them to also join Vodacy or a mentor program or a coaching program to get that? Or do you think it's more wise for you just to kind of have the knowledge yourself and you lead this thing? Don't even get their input, because maybe they're going to say, I don't want to design it like that. But you know you need to design it like this. Should they join and get that education themselves?
It depends, right? It depends, again, on what they're bringing to the table. If they're just going to come in as the money partner and they just want to be part of a deal,
right,
and they don't want to have any input or say, then no, why would they need to, right? If they want to have a bunch of input and say and everything else, well, then everybody probably needs to be on the same page of your view of what this road looks like, right? What blueprint are we actually going to follow? And how are we going to execute on operations? How are we going to execute on acquisition, setup, management, marketing, all that stuff? If everybody has some input there, then everybody ought to be on the same page. Right. Now, I don't think it's smart to do that. If you're bringing on a partner, usually somebody needs to take the reins on something. You can't have too many cooks in the kitchen.
Interesting.
And so usually, like I tell people this all the time when they're partnering. We have people and members of our group and our our Vodacy family that have invested in understanding how to operate this, the knowledge that we have, the blueprint to follow, the coaches that they can go ask questions to, the community of people that are a few steps ahead of them. They've invested that time and that energy to develop this like knowledge base and this expertise, right? And then they bring on a partner, and that money partner might be bringing in all the money. And I said, listen, you have to make sure that everybody is clear who's running the ship here, who's running the charge. One of the biggest mistakes I've ever made in my entire investing career was, and it lost myself and the partner who brought the money in a significant amount of money. It took me almost a year and a half to dig out of a hole that I dug, because I allowed somebody who was a great businessman, great business person, made a lot of money in their field, want to invest on a development deal with me. And I had been in the real estate game, not for a short period of time. I was probably in real estate investing. This was only probably 10 years ago. And for, that would put me in the real estate game for 15 years. Wow. It's not like I was brand new to this.
Right.
So I had a lot of years in real estate. I took a significant chunk of money from a money partner and they came in. And then when all the decisions were made, because they had so much money involved, I said, hey, listen, let's make decisions by committee. Well, part of that committee had no real estate experience. They just had money involved. And so, and even though I knew what we should have been doing, I would say, hey, okay, well, listen, I know it's your money. So I'm going to try to do it your way. And we're going to try to navigate this way. That was a huge disservice to them and to myself, because I knew what we were supposed to do on the real estate side, but I didn't have clear expectations on who was really running running the show. And so it was, hey, I'm gonna put this all together, and then I'm gonna come to you and make sure that you sign off on it. If you don't sign off on it, we're gonna go a different direction. And that's what kept happening. And so ultimately, this real estate development deal didn't go as planned, didn't do as well as we thought it was going to do, ended up losing us both money. And it took me about a year and a half to get them completely paid back on the money that we lost. And it all could have been avoided if I would have said, hey, listen, no, I'm making the decisions. I know you've got the money in, but you don't have the knowledge and experience that I've invested in over the last 15 years. You don't know real estate. You know this other business very well. I wouldn't go and ask you how to run, or tell you how to run that type of a business, because you've been super successful there. You're investing with me because I've been successful in real estate. But because I wasn't strong enough at the time to say, hey, listen, I've got the expertise here. I'm going to pull this trump card that you don't know what you're doing. And I let them have much more of a stay than I should have at that time, because they had the money involved and we didn't set those expectations up on the front end. The deal didn't go as well as planned. And so it was a big mistake that I learned, expensive mistake that I learned early on, that just because somebody has money involved does not necessarily mean they should be running the show and making the decision. So it depends. Going back to that question, should everybody, if it's a decision by committee, then everybody ought to be on the same page. Everybody ought to have the same experience. Everybody ought to have, because if you both have great experience and you both have great education, it's great to have combine your the resources, if you will, the expertise, if you will, to make the best decision possible. But when somebody's coming from a different world and they don't know the game that you've been investing in, and they don't know the game that you've been learning how to play for a significant period of time, or you've invested to learn how to play, and you're surrounding yourself with people who have been doing it for a long time, and they want to trump that, it makes zero sense to me to do that.
That's a really good story. That's a great story. It seems like it takes a lot of confidence to have to use that trump card, though. To say, like, hey man, I don't need you. I've already have an excess, mm-hmm. a successful Airbnb, a short-term rental. I don't need you. If you want to do this, I'm going to run the ship. That seems like you gotta believe in yourself. That seems like
you do, and it should be on the front end, right? It should be so that money person, if it's just a money partner, can make the decision. I'm okay with that. Yeah, I like that, Jake. I appreciate that you're going to be taking charge here. You're making the decisions, and I'm okay with that.
Right.
But if they're not okay with that, it's way better to know that before you take their money as well, right? Yeah, yeah. And so having those conversations on the front end is critical in any partnership.
I love it. Okay, so we kind of talked about the percentage there. I feel like that goes in also with the capital. Who's going to be the money guy? Who's going to be the knowledge guy? You're going to have that in writing. You're going to draw up a legal contract. Let's go into this because this is an interesting point. We talk about lifestyle asset, being able to use this property with friends and family, right? Maybe they don't want a vacation with you. You know, everyone's got different families here, or there's different weeks. What's a good way to navigate that? Of course, once again, have it in writing, but would you recommend maybe each person gets 1 week out of the year, each person gets 2 weeks, or is there a good way that you found a balance? And you and Dave had the Stargazer. What did that kind of relationship look like? Would you guys kind of work out there? What was that like?
Yeah. So one, I suggest it whenever there's a partnership, I just suggest that we say, hey, listen, now it's more of a business. It's not a lifestyle asset as much anymore. Wow. And so we're going to, if I want to use it, I rent the property. If you want to use it, you rent the property. Mm-hmm. We just pay the going rate. And mm-hmm. so we're going to pay to use our properties. And so now that's, in my opinion, that's the cleanest, best way to do it because each partner understands, hey, listen, this is an asset. Mm-hmm. I can, if I want to use it 5 weeks a year, my partner's not going to care too much because I'm paying for it.
Right.
Right. If they want to use it 10 weeks a year, mm-hmm. I don't care because they're paying for it. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the easiest and cleanest way when you go into a partnership, now it becomes much more of a business, not as much of a lifestyle asset where you're not going to, you know, because no, the second best is what I say is if we're going to use it, we're using it last minute. And so we can use the property, but we can't book it way out in advance. And so if we want to use it, we're going to use it like within a week or so. Yeah. And so that, you know, we're going to use it. It's not me going to most likely book anyway. So we're going to use it during that kind of the off times when it's not being used.
Okay.
So
that makes sense.
Where that becomes more of a problem is certain properties have really short lead times. Certain properties don't work very well like that because it likely is going to book within a week. And that's like your booking window is a lot shorter. And so you could still be using and taking a lot of money off the table by using it last minute. And so if you're going to do that, I still think you should have some sort of a, hey, you can use it last minute up to so many times a year, right? And so, or up to so many nights per year. So you've got to have limitations and structure around it. Otherwise, you run down the road of, you know, one of my favorite properties. The only reason we sold it is we didn't have clear expectations on the personal usage. And I just told you there's no relationship. No property is worth more than a relationship,
right?
And so one of my top performing properties I owned with a partner and kids started getting older and his kids started getting older. They were coming to be high school age, college age, and they wanted to use it and they wanted to use it on the weekends and they were using it a lot. And it became to where all of a sudden we didn't have really clear expectations. And so it became way more of just a lifestyle asset and a home that they could, a vacation home for them. And we had always just used it when we wanted to use it. We didn't have anything set up like that. And so it was never a problem when it was just us and the kids were young and they had to use it when we wanted to use it because we were busy, right? And we weren't going to use it that often. And he wasn't using it that often. But then all of a sudden kids grew up and they started getting high school age, college age, getting married, and they want to use it. And now all of a sudden it was not a very clear expectation. And it was, you know, it led to the sale of the property for us. We just said, hey, listen, this is becoming more of a vacation home. Let's sell the property, reallocate the funds. And it was one of my best properties. I wish I still had it. And it was, we probably would have had we had clearer expectations on the front end. And so it's all these pieces of advice are because of mistakes I made, right?
They're
and so
very valuable, right? These it's are valuable.
Not, it's not, I'm not guessing on this. I'm saying if I could do things different, here's how I'd do it. So now if I'm in a partnership, I just say, hey, listen, if we want to use the property, we're going to pay for the property. We're going to pay to use it, right? And we're just pay the going rate. So we're going to go down because it's going to cost us that. And now, if I have my own property, that's not what I do, right? I am going to make that decision, but I understand it because it does cost me the potential of getting that, you know, getting that property booked, but I'm the only one that it affects. Mm-hmm. So that I can make that decision. When I have somebody else, another mm-hmm. partner in the property, mm-hmm. it makes it to where we say, hey, listen, if I'm going to use the property, it affects their ability to make money on that property.
Right.
Right. So,
right.
so what I just typically do, the number one thing I suggest is if partners want to use the property, we book it just like anybody else would book it.
Wow. Okay. I think this is really good. Now I'm going to ask you a question that I think someone's probably thinking in their car when they're driving and listening to this. All right.
Okay.
Maybe a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Say you have an average nightly stay, or you got to book at least maybe three nights or whatever it is. So maybe six, you know, Monday through Saturday it's booked, but Sunday's open. Right? Should someone be able just to go use that property on Sunday because no one's going to be able to book it because there's another booking on Monday? So you have one day open and you have to have at least three nights. So what do you do on that Sunday?
Yeah, those orphan nights.
Do you give it away? Do you go, hey man, you can use it. No one's going to book it anyway.
Yeah, or we definitely do that.
Okay.
I would be lying if I said we didn't do that.
Right.
You know, okay. Dave and I had properties together. We were super flexible. We're like, yeah. Hey, bro, nobody's going to use it. Go down and use it. Mm-hmm. And he would do the same for us. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you can have definitely flexibility with that stuff. The problem with it is when you don't have a rule to follow, then it's always up to, hey, maybe I can do this.
These nights start to pop up.
Exactly. All of a sudden it's like, hey, Jake, what do you think about this? Hey, yeah. Wanted to go down and use it. What do you think about this? Oh,
yeah.
You know, then it doesn't ever, it's never equitable. And so when it's not equitable, there's somebody that's upset. There's somebody that's like, man, feels like you're taking advantage of this thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I always feel like when you turn it into a partnership, it becomes more of a business, treat it as a business, and just say, hey, listen, the easiest way to do it is anybody that wants to book it just books the property.
Okay.
You want to use it anytime you want to use it, go ahead, but you're just paying to use the property.
Okay. That was great. Now I'm going to ask another question. I think this may be, I think you've kind of already touched on this a lot, so we can definitely skip on it if you already feel like you answered it, but I want to talk about the target audience a little bit, right? You're going in with a partner. Now we have could be completely different ideas. We've talked about somebody saying, I have the knowledge, just let me choose this and let me run down this. I'm going to find the right property and build this thing. Have you ever found that maybe, what's the correct word? A generalistic umbrella is maybe better for a partnership, meaning like instead of saying like, we want 18 to 25 year olds who are coming out of a metropolitan area that are going out and they want to have a couple's getaway. And now I'm kind of, you know, I'm niching it down, but more so if it's in a partnership to try and find both, maybe you go, this is for people who love the outdoors. And now it's a little bit more, now I have more of a range on age. Now I have a little bit more of a range on the location because now it's just outdoors. Have you found that it's better just to please both, go general, or should you always keep it niched down?
I think you niche it down. I mean, it goes back to the expertise, right? Mm-hmm. To say, hey, listen, if you're gonna run down, and I'm assuming we're talking about our blueprint, right? Mm-hmm. We're gonna run down the blueprint that the Vodacy signature recipe, the blueprint we have found that works for us and for a lot of people. But we found that this blueprint works. Mm-hmm. Well, part of that blueprint is select a target audience and create a unique experience for that target audience, right?
Right.
And so if somebody is not, and you're going into a partnership and you're not on the same page of the blueprint you're going to follow, you're not on the same page of our view of success in this world, of what it's going to take to have success, generalization, it becomes commoditization, right? So when you're trying to be a general fix for everybody, you become a commodity in a market. Mm-hmm. Well, commodities trade on price and it's a race to the bottom.
Right.
So we have to say, okay, listen, if we're going to try to cast a wide net and be attractive to everybody, we really are not giving any specific person a reason to pay us more money than somebody else out there. We just become, everybody kind of becomes the same. We become a commodity. It's a race to the bottom on price. And that's all we're competing on. The reason we do this is because we want to be very specifically perfect for a small group of people, not perfect for a larger group of people, but that small group of people, we're giving them a really good reason to pay us more money than somebody else, right?
Okay.
And so if that part of the plan is not really, like, one partner doesn't like that and another partner does, well, now you're at odds on how you're going to operate and manage this property and set it up and acquire it, everything else.
Right.
And so it goes down to, you know, really buying into the process and who's going to call the shots. And even if you have one person that is calling the shots, you really ought to be that person who understands the road you're going to run down and is the expert, needs to make sure that that other partner knows the road you're running down.
Right.
So here's the, I'm not going to dive into every single aspect of what we're going to do,
but
here's the general idea, right? Okay. We're going to select very specific properties in specific markets. Mm. We're going to create unique experiences for a target audience. Mm. It's going to be niched down to a very specific audience.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to forget about probably 80% of the market and focus on 20%, but we're giving them a reason to pay us more. And then we're going to do different things to stand out. Are you okay with that?
Right.
Because the decisions I'm making, they're going to follow those lines.
Right. Okay.
You know, and so everybody needs to still be on that same page. Mm. And if they are, like, no, I don't think you compromise on trying to be more general to be pleasing to the other partner. Mm. If you're going to go into this business, go in it to win.
Mm.
It's the same thing I was doing on the development deal. Mm. I was trying to compromise on the decisions I knew I should have made on the real estate side because I wanted to please the partner and something that they would think that was going to work as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more generalized, like let's be kind of everything to everybody. And you become attractive to nobody,
right?
You just blend in. And all of a sudden you're like, hey, listen, this isn't working the way I thought it was going to work. Mm-hmm. And so it goes back to that whole same thing is saying, pick a road you're going to run down. Somebody's got to take charge on that road. Mm-hmm. And everybody else has to buy into it though, because you don't want to have a fight every decision you're making, even though they agree to let you make the decisions.
That's huge.
Still give them a blueprint of what you're going to be doing.
Right. That's huge. Okay. All right, that was fantastic. We got two more questions. We're kind of wrapping it up here. We're getting towards the end. Now let's go into this right here. God forbid this doesn't work out. You're with a brother, a sister, a best friend, a family member, whoever it is, and you're realizing, man, we put it in writing and things are bumping heads. They're not letting me take the reins on this. This isn't going to work. They're using it. Whatever the reason is, it's not going to work. What have you found to be a good exit strategy? Do you just take the loss and walk away and try and mend this relationship now? Or I guess that's something you put in the contract.
Yeah, you're going to have exit clauses, right? You're going to say, okay, what are we going to do? Uh-huh. How are we going to get out of this? Are we going to sell the property?
Mm.
I mean, obviously that's usually what happens is you end up having to sell the property, but what could one of the partners buy the property? Right.
Interesting.
You know, and if that's the case, what are the terms of it? How are you going to decide the sell price? What if you both want to buy the property? Mm. You just don't want to be partners together anymore. You have to be able to walk through those scenarios of what is this going to look like? Right.
Okay.
And have it in writing again, before it's a problem, because when it becomes a problem, then you just refer back to something you both agreed upon. Because what I think you go into any partnership is, hey, listen, we're good friends. I don't ever want a property, a business, anything to ever come between that.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's put this all in writing so that should this not work out for whatever reason, it doesn't mean that our friendship doesn't work out, right? We're just going to follow what's in here.
Right.
We're going to sell the property. We're going to wash our hands. We're going to give each other a hug and we're going to move on as friends, right? Because again, no property is worth a friendship. No property is worth a relationship with a friend, a family member, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, they become problems because we weren't on the same page in the very beginning. And then it becomes a problem. Emotions start to fly.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, well, that's not fair. That's not fair. Mm-hmm. Well, we agreed upon it at first. Most of the time, you might just say, we're just going to wash our hands of it. We're going to sell the property and we're going to walk away.
Right. I love it. Okay. Now, who's a good lawyer to go to? Is there a certain kind of lawyer that does these kinds of things?
Yeah. I'll tell you the easiest thing nowadays, literally go to ChatGPT and say, hey, listen, I'm going into a partnership. I need to help writing up an LLC, simple LLC. And then ultimately tell them what you're going to have written out. And then go have a lawyer just, you can have a local lawyer then go review it. It just saves yourself a lot of money from them having to draft it all up. You can go have them review it after you've put together a draft that you're both willing to sign.
Okay.
Use the AI tools, help them draft operating agreements, help them draft exit strategies. It's going to ask you all those questions as you're doing it, as if a lawyer was doing it. Saves you a ton of money. Take it to the lawyer. Say, hey, listen, is there anything else you put in here? Mm-hmm. And your local attorneys in your areas are able to help you find this stuff out. In our group, we have recommendations of two or three different attorneys.
Oh, wow.
So they're out there to help you put this stuff together.
Interesting. Okay, very interesting. Last question here. We've touched on a lot of stuff. We've gone back and forth, played devil's advocate a little bit better. Would you recommend somebody goes into a partnership with a family or friend?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. We've seen partnerships work out amazing. You know, and it's when they're set up correctly and the expectations are set up correctly. Some of the best partnerships I've had were with my, you know, best friends and family, right? And it's, it doesn't mean that you go in on every deal together. And sometimes things change and you have to sell properties because, you know, but you sell them based on it's changing for one of you or the other of you. And you know that things are changing. You have really good agreements and you're like, hey, listen, this isn't working as well as I was hoping for, or I want to do something different. And it's very clear in your operating agreement how to exit. And everybody's friends and everybody's great afterwards, right? And so it's not something that you have to, that you should be afraid of. It's, you should be afraid of it if you if you don't have the guts to have that conversation, all these things on the front end, and you have all these conversations on what if something goes bad, how much do you want to use the property, who should make the decisions. And I'm telling you right now, decisions by committee a lot of times does not work out. You have to have somebody that's leading the charge. There's got to be somebody that is the tiebreaker vote. Even if even if it's decision by committee, somebody has to have the authority to say, here's what we're going to do. Because you're going to have different, there's going to be times where not everybody agrees upon everything, right? And so just having clear expectations can make great partnerships. And yeah, I wouldn't avoid it. Now, I wouldn't just go into partnership either because somebody said, hey, well, I want to partner with you. And you got to think about if you really want to do a partnership. I don't always want to partner on properties, right? There's times where I'm just like, I don't really see the value or the benefit. Like, what do you bring into the table? And and sometimes if I need the money and you're bringing money, great. If I don't need the money and that's all you're bringing, I might not bring you on as a partner. Why not just keep the deal right to myself? And so that's not being selfish either. It's saying, hey, do we both want the partnership and is it beneficial to both of us? Because that's what makes good partnerships as well, that we both are bringing something to the table. Maybe it's three of you bringing something to the table and everybody's bringing something that maybe is lacking from somebody else, and that makes a really nice partnership.
Wow. That's, I love it. When, as you were talking, that made me think of, we actually have an episode like this, episode 290, Cameron and Jason, how two friends built a successful short-term rental business. We actually had them here. They came in, so it's an in-person interview. You can go listen to it. And they talk about how they partnered, how they found each other, and some more things. So if you're thinking about it, these are two best friends. They've been best
friends forever. Their families are friends, and they're making it work out beautifully. And they both, it's, and there's, the sky's the limit on how you structure a partnership. People always say, well, how should we structure it? Should we do this? Should we do that? I said, listen, it's so dependent on everybody involved and how you want to structure it. But but you first get really clear on what everybody wants, really clear on what everybody's contributing. And then you start developing this partnership and developing it and structuring it in a way that works for everybody.
Wow. This has been beneficial. It makes me think, man, if I, whenever I go home for Christmas, I'm going to be like, hey guys, just so you know, I have a lot of knowledge in this, man. If they want to put some money into
put the money in, you'd be the expert, man.
But all right, that's all I had. I hope we covered everybody's questions. 32 minutes, great episode. Awesome. Now you know, listen to it on the car ride or the plane ride home and decide for yourself.
Yeah.
Do you want to do this? And it could be beneficial.
It can be really beneficial. So it's a great way to scale, right? It's a great way to mitigate risk. You know, there's sometimes where we have friends or family members come into Vodacy all the time and they're planning on their first deal as being a partner. A partnership, and they're going to come in together. They're going to learn together. They're going to put this together, get together. And so there's, you know, you could have multiple experts at the table that are learning it together. It's just, you know, don't think of it as a good or a bad thing. It's a neutral. It can be really great. It can be really bad. But what makes it really bad a lot of times is just a lack of expectations and a lack of clarity on the front end. And that's really what hurts, especially partnerships with friends and family, is we just assume we're all on the same page.
That's what I assumed. I thought you were literally going to say, no, this is kind of something you guys just talk about and it's a handshake deal. But so no, that's the main thing I took away from this, is you have it in writing.
Don't have these types of deals, handshake deals, just because things change. Life changes. People change. Things happen. You know, what if it's not operating as well? And who's going to, there's going to always be fingers being pointed, right? And it's not always that somebody is going to, you know, take the blame for it, right? And take responsibility for it. And so make sure that everything's very clear and expectations are set, and partnerships can be a great thing.
I love it. That's all we have for today.
Okay. We'll wrap it up on that note. And so those of you who are going to have some of those holiday conversations, setting up those partnerships, you know, you heard it here. They're not a bad thing. So guys, we appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it's valuable. We appreciate you spending it on these shows, these episodes, listening with us, joining in, sending us in those comments and questions to support at Vodacy.com. As always, that's the best place to get it. We didn't have any questions today. Mm-mm. I swear no we had questions. One sent in. No I swear question. I swear I read one.
I'll double check. I'll double check for next week.
I thought we had a question.
I'll look. Let's see if I can find it. Do you remember?
It was about show notes. We were posting properties, and they wanted to see, somebody was asking where we see the Vodacy portfolio. And so They were saying, hey, listen, I know we post the properties in the show notes that we're talking about, but they were asking about the Vodacy portfolio. And we actually don't have that posted anywhere publicly, but you can go to vodacy.com/success and see a lot of our.
They want to see like all the properties.
Yeah. So you can see a lot of the properties on there. And so that's, I can't remember the name of the person that sent that in. I believe it was Keith, if my memory serves me correctly. Right. But it was a question about that. Go to vodacy.com/success or just go to there and click on the success stories. You'll see not only a lot of the testimonials, but we have lots and lots of properties on there when you're trying to reverse engineer and check out some great properties on there. So
I'm counting. I'm at 36.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. A lot of them that we've talked about on here, but there's probably 50 properties on there you can go check out. So there we go.
There it is.
Hey listen, man, I'm just doing your job.
Sorry, dude.
If you have questions, send them in. We will see them, and one of us will make sure that we get it answered. And so, guys, as always, we don't run ads or sponsorships on the show. So the only way the show grows is if you guys share it. So if you know somebody else who would like to be a part of these conversations, walk into this game with their eyes wide open, listen to some of these things that we talk about, share the show. Those things help us a lot. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And if you don't have anybody to share it with, those platforms will share it with other people like you when you do that for us. So those things are appreciated. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.